to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
Rolling up Action Jackson. I'm Tom Allen. She's AV on the board. S&P futures up a whole 250. 250. So not much. We're doing a creep. We're only half a day today. We have Kevin?
You do.
How are you?
I'm doing good. Merry Christmas.
Yeah, Merry Christmas to all. It's a tad late this morning. Very, very foggy in Chicago. Driving on Lakeshore Drive, it was like being in the moors this morning, for God's sake. It was
foggy is a way of life for some of us.
But I got to use my fog lights. My new fog lights.
Well,
I got
pretty
to use
exciting.
Them. Yeah, got to use them. So what? So the guy says now. Everybody says he's not new blood. The new Boeing CEO.
Well, he's not. He was chairman of the board, right?
Right. Wasn't the other guy chairman, and then he and president, and then he went just to become president to get through this deal. Then this guy was named.
I can't swear to the history of it, but hey, somebody had to take the fall here. Sooner or later, you know, it's interesting how these things happen, because it's pretty typical in corporate world that you kind of you leave them in place for a while, because you know early on you don't want to admit anything, you know, you don't want to admit fault. So if you fire somebody immediately, you're admitting fault. But when it's obvious and the notion of fault is in the rearview mirror, then somebody has to take the pipe.
The it's a massive organization. I mean, obviously, do they wonder how it's even set up, Kevin? Where they got the aerospace people, they've got the military people, they've got even got some smaller planes too, right? But they didn't earn some of that business too, the private jet. I mean, they're all over the place.
Sure, yeah.
I mean, they're pretty much everywhere.
And I don't, you know, that would be interesting. Let me see if I can pull it up, what their organization chart is, because they could, they could be a traditional organization with multiple product lines, but they may be product organized, which means that they have whole divisions that do different products, and those divisions each have their own infrastructure, their finance, their marketing, their IT, their, you know, all of that kind of stuff. I'd have to look it up.
Because the, you wonder if a, to be perfectly blunt, they're a semi-monopoly, right? When you have a duopoly and the demand is pretty much everything that both sides can make, it's not like you're, I guess you're competing, but it's not competition like, you know, a bar owner would have with 15 saloons within walking distance.
You know what? It's kind of interesting, because there is this, there's a separate market for all kinds of mid-sized planes. And
right.
For example, and I can't remember the name of the manufacturer now, but when I went to Nashville in September, I flew on a plane that was manufactured by a Canadian company.
Well, Bombardier, sure.
Yeah.
They're reasonably competitive. They do railroad cars too. They're a big company. I think they either bought or did something with the Brazilian company. It was a Brazilian company, too. Or they have a marketing agreement, maybe. Because a Brazilian company makes some planes, too. And I don't know how big, who owns Gulfstream? There's other smaller plane manufacturers that are getting a little bit bigger. But I actually looked at the Bombardier. I think their biggest plane holds about 60 people, 60 to 80. They're not that small. They're regional jets. I mean, most of the regional planes now, they used to be those real high-end prop jobs. They're not. They're all jets now, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
When I flew out to pick up this, I bought a Dodge Ram Charger years ago, and I flew into Vernal, Utah. Now, what is unique about Vernal, Utah, Kevin? Only you would probably know this. I don't know if AV would know this.
What's unique about Vernal, Utah?
Yep.
I don't know. Do they have a big festival at the Vernal Equinox? You got to ask. I don't know.
They consider themselves the dinosaur capital of the world. Why they are, I have no idea, but they claim they are. So, if you fly into Denver, which you do. I mean, I did go there. I mean, all of a sudden, you take the, you got to head all the way around the, you know, it's a big freaking place. So, anyway, you got to hustle from where you landed from Chicago to wherever there's other, you know, what do you call the things? The different concourse. And then you walk down the steps, and there had to be 35 of these prop planes out there. Every one of them is the exact same as the other. One's flying a steamboat, one's flying a Crested Butte, one's flying a Vernal, and all these, everybody who lands there pretty much splits up because everybody's got, you distribute out of Denver and or Salt Lake City. And if you don't get competition, I mean, I'm always, you know, bitching about not having enough competition airlines. I mean, Steamboat would love to have a Salt Lake City connection as well as a Denver connection, and they just can't get it. So most times people from Steamboat will drive to Denver rather than make the connection because it costs you more to get from Steamboat to Denver than it does from Denver to like New York or Chicago or someplace. And they figured if they had the connection coming the other way, like from Delta or somebody instead of just United, that it would be competitive enough where you could actually do it. But I think all those things now are jets, or most of them, which is interesting because they were nice planes. I mean, those suckers are going 350 miles an hour. It's not like they were slow. And real pressurized and everything. I mean, you're up there. I mean, it's not like you're our buddy Doc. We went skiing years and years ago, and he was taking his law school exams at Northwestern. So we drive out, and he flies out. He lands in Denver, and it's snowing to beat the band. And some guy with a beard, long hair, goes out, brushes off the wings with his big broom, and he goes, "Let's go." He was the pilot. So in they go by 10 people. And he said this guy, you know, was not pressurized. So they were 10,000 feet. And he said, you know, the guy's going through these mountain passes. He goes, he was a terrific pilot. He goes, but it was a little weird not getting up very much. And, you know, like the mountain next to you is as high as you are type of thing. And I don't know if I've ever done that. But anyway, so are you getting rid of your TikTok?
Which TikTok is this?
See, you guys, you high-end... TikTok is they banned TikTok from government issues smartphones because evidently some country put out this app. You know, how could this thing's not even been around that long? The U.S. Navy thinks TikTok is a threat to national cybersecurity. They sent out an alert on Facebook, I wouldn't even get it, urging military personnel and staff to delete the app if they have it downloaded, a government issue, blah, blah, blah. Evidently, everything is being listened to by some country. It's like the Emirates or someplace. Why do people think all this stuff is secure? I don't quite get it, but so the Chinese runs apps popularity. They think that Beijing is actually listening and everything everybody's doing.
Well, the way I usually do my own computing is that the more mobile it is, the less I do. So, for instance, I don't use payment apps on my telephone because I just don't want the information there.
Well,
I don't go into my bank accounts on my smartphone.
Well, one of the
I can harden my own personal network better than I can harden those, even though there is decent security software available for them.
One of the ladies that used to be, well, she's just retired, I think, from the CBOE, but she was a quote reporter back in the day in the OEX, so I know her real well. And Juanita was her name, or is her name. And of course, in the politically incorrect world, she was from Hawaii and was, you know, somewhat stocky, so of course she was pineapple forever, right? Well, nobody even knew the word Juanita. She was pineapple. Well, see, she'd be getting coffee in a Dunkin' Donuts ahead of me in the morning, and she had the big, huge honking phone with the pink case and everything. So she'd put the phone over to the thing and hit the app and then type something in, and then I'd wave my flip phone right behind her on the thing, and she goes, "What are you doing?" I said, you'll find out. Everything I buy for the rest of the day will be on you. She looked at me, "You wouldn't really do that, would you?" I said, "You wouldn't believe how secret of this flip phone is. I just stole all your passwords." But that's okay, you know.
Yeah, that is okay.
Yeah.
Just jumping back a little bit. I'm looking at the Boeing organization chart now. It's a little bit. It takes a little bit of deciphering, but it looks like they have separate divisions for space and security, defense, space and security. Boeing global services, and I'm not sure what that means, although it might be just common corporate services to the rest of the company. Then they have a commercial airlines division and a Boeing International division. Scrolling down to the board, it's kind of interesting. I didn't realize that Caroline Kennedy is a board member, nor did I know that Nikki Haley is a board member.
It's funny you should mention that, Kevin, because there I was last night at Dr. J's walking through. Well, they do the Christmas lights in the park. The place is mobbed because everybody wants to go look at the zoo lights. But I managed to find a parking spot in front of their house on their narrow little street for the suburban, so I was pretty happy about that. Anyway, so I was talking to a gentleman there, an attorney, and I will not go into the name of the company because everybody knows who the hell the guy is if I did that. But he was doing paid somebody some incredible amount of money for like a bonus and when he left and so forth. If I lobbed the name out there, everybody knows what I'm talking about, so I won't do that. And he was part of a group that was, quote, investigating. And they interviewed everybody on the board, even people on the compensation committee. And he said, other than the people in the compensation committee, nobody had any idea what the guy was making, paid no attention to it, even though they voted on it. Because a few people in the compensation committee didn't even really know. And the board, it was a big, you know, company like Boeing. And he was rattling off the names of the people on there. It's the usual, you know, Madeleine Albright, that type of thing. These who's who boards. Kevin, these people, all these people, those get paid. They get their name, and they don't do anything. Who's the blondie bombshell that was the head of the one company that supposedly had the product, never did anything? And she had Henry Kissinger on the board. The guy's got to be 95. She had one of the generals. Was it Storm and Norman? One of those guys was on there that's been retired forever. Well, Norman's dead. So, but I mean, it was like, how do these
but people. But is he still on the board?
He might still be on it. But I mean, how do you get these people? I mean, what are you doing? But her board was that, you know, the product that there never was a product. She just went out for the money or something. You know what I'm talking about? God, where the hell's Dr. J when I need him? But she was like the senator's daughter or something.
So they formed a corporation. They got a stellar, an all-star board, and sooner or later they may come up with a product.
Huh? Right, something like that. These people, they're shameless. I mean, they're shameless. I mean, when Wendy Graham, wasn't she the head of the governance committee at Enron? And she was the one who got her hubby to pass the law that all the stuff they did was non-regulated because it was all physical and it wasn't futures contracts or something. The swaps were not futures contracts. Not that regulation would have helped out all that.
Yeah, right? I don't remember the details anymore. But to be honest with you, that's. I'd like to cite that, but yeah, it's the nexus of government and some of these corporations is let's go somewhere between completely wrong and unconscionable.
Well, I mean, if you were to ask me what I think is wrong with American business, you know, American corporations, I think it's a total breakdown in the morality of the board structure. When you talk about the entire, I mean, today, Kevin, if you listen to the financial press, you will hear, you'll hear a bunch of people on the various and sundry panels of people, so-called experts, you call them talking heads, and they will talk about this company's doing great, they're buying their stock back, they're doing this. It's become such an incredible part of the vernacular and the way we do things. That if you would ask somebody, why are you buying a stock back? Well, that's what they do. I mean, that's what they do. They're giving money to shareholders. Wait a minute. They're buying shares from a guy who doesn't want to be there anymore. How the hell are you giving money to shareholders? And the whole idea of just paying a special dividend or something.
No, they're inflating the price of the shares.
Inflating the price of the shares.
Which is fine for the average shareholder. It's fine for the shareholder who has it as part of a fund portfolio. But it's really, really good for the insiders who happen to hold a whole lot of stock.
But it really isn't. If it's not like anything else, Kevin, if it's not a good buy, it's not good for the shareholders. If you buy the stuff back in at 40 and 5 years later it's 200, yeah, it was a good buy like everything else. But if you buy it in at, for a while, IBM's the average price that they bought their stuff in was like 180, and the stock's trading 130. How's that good for anybody? Except for the person who got his options, maybe exercised his options when it was 180.
Well, that's why I said it in the order I said it.
But I mean, it's like when you don't see this too much anymore, although they might still be doing it. You'll see a country, if you can remember back where they'd say, the government entered the market today to support the dollar. You'll hear the Japanese government tried to support the yen, which means they're buying yen with their hunk of dollars, right? So they're taking yen out of the system and putting dollars in. But if you buy it at such a price where at the end of the day you didn't do any good and it's just lower, all you did was piss away a bunch of the population's money, right? You didn't support anything. You just made a bad trade. Just saying.
Yeah, well, I'm with you.
All right, so we got to do a little bit of. We got all the guys today are going to be talking markets, a little bit of sports. But the Packers. Is this guy? You know, the guy. You watch the Bulls at all? I mean, this is Zach LaVine. Boy, is he allergic to leather or what? I mean, he has some great nights, but when he doesn't, you know, he'll be 10 for 50. He'll never give the ball up.
Right. He does not have any discretion about shooting. And you know what? There really aren't very many basketball players who do, or at least scorers who do. They pretty much have the attitude, the shooter's mentality. When I'm hot, keep shooting. When I'm cold, I'm due.
I've always liked teams. I think to a certain extent, you don't really want anybody who can't score, especially now in this day and age. But I don't really want your biggest scorer being also the guy who brings the ball up court. Because it becomes like a playground. First guy over the court with the ball shoots.
Yep.
And
then when he shoots a lot, then a lot of other people aren't as willing to give it up because they don't think they're going to get it back.
When I was a Ute, I played in a lot of leagues, Kevin. And after I left school, I got better shape. I actually got halfway decent. I mean, I was never real good, but I was halfway decent to where. We were on a team, and I was the best guy on our team. And then I got recruited for a couple other teams. And I'll tell you what, the hardest thing in basketball is if it's kind of your team and your friends, I was always, I would always be cognizant of the fact that if Kevin worked his way open on the block, which is where he wanted to be, I would try and get him the ball. Because that's your spot, and you work for it. And, you're going to be an odds-on chance you're going to score from there. No. None of us were good enough to score from anywhere, right? So very few people are, actually. And so the idea was that you would try and work your people. The hardest thing on earth, if I shot the ball 10, 15 times a game, it was pretty decent because you got it. If it was your spot to shoot, you knew where you could make it, knew where you could pass it, and those kinds of things. But I got on these good teams, and all of a sudden I, only got the ball when they got, double covered or something. The hardest thing in the world is to go 3 for 5 when you only get the ball, when you're not ready for it, it's not in stride, it's not anything, and all of a sudden you get this dump-off thing, and like, hey, what's this? Is this the basketball? And, it's very, very difficult. Then you throw up a clunker, and they go, that's why we don't pass it to you, type of thing. It really is, you either got to have a team game going or you're not, and whenever it seems like the best point guards, in history, in Magic, His idea was to get the other people set up, right? And he would score if he had to. He certainly could drive and everything else. But seems to me you can do either one or the other. I mean, just saying.
Yeah, no, I'm with you, and it's interesting that the teams that share the ball really well, even if they have big scorers, the teams that share the ball really well have been NBA champions over and over and over the last 10,
yep.
15 years. There's so few of them, but San Antonio did it. The Warriors did it. Not as much Cleveland with LeBron when they won it because they just didn't have those kinds of players to go with him.
But even LeBron would only really quote take over late in the game. I mean, he really didn't want to score 50 every night. It starts to get to you.
It's exhausting.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it is. What do you think? We had a big deal yesterday. I mean, we're kind of all over the place. We're kind of talking about next year. They were talking yesterday on CNBC. They had some people on. What about live gates? And how it's getting harder and harder to bring people, you know, to actually go out and see the football game. Is like evidently that the attendance is dropping league wide. I don't know if it's, you know, it's not critical yet or anything, but I think it's happening a lot in some of the other sports as well, Kevin. I don't know how you do both things. I don't know how you make it such a studio event. And I mean, I was watching the Sunday night game. I watched the Dallas game pretty much stem to stern. And both teams did a lot of three and outs. Kevin, I kept hitting the button and going and cooking and doing laundry. I mean, I don't see how you could possibly sit there for 3.5 hours watching that thing. I mean, in a stadium, it's got to be other than your, you know, hopefully you're with your buddies having a couple of beers. But even so, it's 11 minutes of action in a 3.5 hour time slot. I don't know.
That's a problem. And I think the other thing that they've done is I personally believe that they've had this misguided emphasis on filling up every free second with some kind of sensory overload. It isn't that you don't want entertainment on the commercial breaks and things like that. It's just that it's so tasteless.
Yep.
I've been bagging on Notre Dame basketball for this. Although I will say, for the UCLA game, they dialed it way back. So, you know, in their case, they have the games against the bad teams that everybody plays in November and December. And, yeah, for those, if you want to program it so that the kids can go, hey, I'm on the Jumbotron, and, you know, you do your dance cams and all that, I get it. For the UCLA game, we had exactly one dance cam, and that was about the only truly offensive thing that they had. But most of the time, you know, they load it up, they put all this stupid stuff on the court, they put... here, let's come down and let's do some kind of, make a fool out of yourself contest. Let's just blast the worst possible music that, you know, I can't even imagine that a metalhead would like it. It's so bad. And this whole sensory thing, and I think that doesn't help their cause. They think they're filling up the time and making it entertaining, and I think what they're really doing is having people go, ew. This kind of sucks. So,
Kevin, we have to take...
Can I get back to the game, I guess? But, you have to build the sports experience around sports fans, not right. around people who don't care about the game and just want to...
Kevin, we got a dash. We'll talk to you.
See if I can get on the jumbo.
Merry Christmas to you and everybody. Talk to you Thursday morning, eh?
You will talk to me Thursday morning, so we'll see you then. Merry Christmas.
Yes.
I'll tweet out my Christmas gift to the listeners. It'll be my my Christmas playlist. I'll send it out shortly.
It's not going to be a nude picture, is it, I hope?
No, it's just my music playlist.
All right, very good. All right, buddy, take care. SP Futures up 275, not much going on like you'd expect for Christmas Eve. Be right back, Mr. Joel Alconin.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Hunt. Tom Hunt. She's AV on the board. S&P futures up 275. NASDAQ futures up 650. Dow futures up 27. Not much going on, but keep leaking up, leaking up. We have the... Well, we're waiting for stuff there. We're waiting for stuff here. AV, you ready to do your traffic, weather, sports here? Would we do individual stocks moving at Boeing up $1.60? We got the Nikkei up nine points. Call that flat. Shanghai up 19.7%. They're bouncing back there. They were down yesterday. Hang Seng down 42.1%. So not much going on in Asia. Over in Europe, we've got. DAX down 17.1%, FTSE up 9.1%. Check around up 3, call that flat. We're checking our bonds here to see if our Japanese 10-year, U.S. 10-year 1.93, Bund minus 0.24, Japan positive 0.003. Yes! Not sure why we're cheering for that, but we are. Oil up 28 cents, 60.80. Brent up 47 cents, 66.86. This is one of the big movers yesterday. Gold 14.94 up another 5.80. Silver up 16 cents. Silver's gone from 16.70 to 17.66 in like five business days. So big move out of these guys, which is good because they've got some spreads down in the gold that are bullish. So I'm happy about that. AV, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Merry Christmas, everyone. Hope you guys having a great morning and a festive mood. It is 38 degrees currently, really dense fog, especially by the lake.
We just drove through that. It was very foggy.
Very dense, yeah. And
by the way, were you impressed with my fog lights?
Yeah.
Not really, huh? Just saying, you know.
It was hard to...
You're saying you didn't notice them? Well, that's interesting. All right, well, thank you for that.
Well, it was early morning.
Early morning fog. I hate it when that happens, yeah.
Yeah, so hopefully it will clear out soon. Also, the day will be with a high humidity, partially cloudy, no chances of rain. And the high of the day will be 51, the lowest 38. In Phoenix, 55 degrees currently, cloudy morning, rain and thunderstorms are expected during the day. The night will remain cloudy with a slight chance of rain showers. The high is 58, the lowest 48. We have a couple of accidents already reported, no wonder. One is on 31st Street at Lakeshore Drive, no details on that. And another one we have on 10 Ryan West before Roosevelt, which is blocking two right lanes. Looks like it's also causing big delays. Also in sports, we have Cardinals that won Seahawks 27-13. Bears lost to Chiefs.
That was Sunday.
Tom.
Yeah, so you're a day behind. It's okay, you know.
It's okay.
The football last night was Green Bay beat Minnesota. They won the division. Well, if they beat, if they don't lose to, they're playing somebody lousy on Sunday. And the Bears are playing the Minnesota, their last game of the year.
The Chiefs?
The Bears lost to the Chiefs. They're playing Minnesota next Sunday.
Yeah, so the last three. It also was on Sunday?
Yeah. So there was the Bears season will thankfully be over this Sunday. But the Bulls lost. The Hawks got clobbered at home 7-1 after actually playing halfway decent on the road. So do we have Joel with us?
Yes.
Joel, how are you?
Good morning, Chief.
How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I got a happy Christmas Eve day, right?
Yeah. Hey, I was just wondering how would you feel if Joel bleep can from Benzinga stack up $10 like the guy from Boeing?
Say that again, please.
What if we read the headline? Joel can from Benzinga stack rallies.
Well, it's not private. I mean, it's not publicly traded, but yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about with the Boeing, and I wouldn't feel too good. That rally yesterday, to me, I don't know. It's following through today. I think what they did, I think the company noticed that the stock had been in a trading range, and they were near the bottom of the trading range, right? And big time, if they would have lost that 320 level, I think it would have been an easy look at 300. So the guys that do technical analysis at Boeing went to the board and said, hey, we need to get this stock off support. And they said, well, do you think if we fire the CEO, we'll rally? And they said, yeah. That's what ended up happening.
What do you read? I mean, every time something like this happens, you try and get to read for what's the shape of the politics, and now we have we have a guy who's in the FAA, who's, you know, acting like he's the bull in the pasture, and I wonder how much pressure he's under from a lot of districts that have suppliers and so forth that are now, I guess, what, Boeing's not going to take any deliveries of just about anything starting mid-January. So I get the people that are used to, you know, building landing craft and hopping them on a train or a truck or whatever you do and sending it off there, now have to essentially inventory in place or else stop production, either one of which is a real pain in you know what.
Yep.
So, you know, there has to be some sort of pressure. Is the thing really unsafe, or what are we doing? Are we talking about, you know, miles and miles and miles of paper to kind of cover somebody's behind, or do we think there's still a problem that's not fixed? I mean, I haven't heard any...
All the questions that you're answering. I mean, changing the CEO doesn't change the fact that they grounded the airplane. It doesn't change the fact that they don't know it was wrong. It doesn't change the fact that they wouldn't with us. They had a wayward satellite, too. I think that kind of added to things, and they're lucky the stock didn't get crushed on that. So... there's still no resolution here. So it's still a headline risk stock. just because they, I'd like to see what happens with this rally, because it's been in the trading range from 320 to 380. If it's going to stay true to form, it's going to, we'll see if it goes back up to 380. I think if this thing continues to rally but doesn't get back near that area, I think there's another shoe to drop. I wouldn't own Boeing with your money, Chief, until this is resolved. And I think they're just putting a Band-Aid on the entire situation.
Yeah, I've been very reluctant to say anything bad about the stock price, because everybody in the world is convinced that as soon as this is over, whenever it is, I mean, they make more money than God on these planes. They got a 7-year backlog. Nobody can go anywhere else. That they've got everything totally locked up. And I know how much it costed Pullman to be a year and a half late with the Amtrak cars in 1977. And all the headaches, and then this has to be the Amtrak cars times 100 a plane, and it's got to be
more complicated.
Well,
yeah,
but I mean, I bet the Amtrak car had 10,000 parts. This thing's got to have a million, right?
What about the write downs? I mean, it's going to have to be some financial impact from this. I guess they're keeping these employees on, right?
Well, there's two issues. One is the if you build something, and theoretically, Southwest is on the hook to buy it, okay? And if you do your double entry accounting, in theory, you haven't lost anything, right? You've just put it out there. But I got to believe these things go for what, about 100 and 120 a piece? Even with Boeing's massive markup, I'm going to say it has to cost Boeing, what do you figure, $80 million a plane? And they've been making 40 a month for 9 months they haven't sold. So that's 360 times, you know, $80 million. That's a lot of dough.
And they also, I read, you know, maybe last week or a week or so ago, that they were, like, paying Southwest employees.
Well, they were
idled by it. So, you know.
Well, they're paying
the fundamentals
Southwest.
Are there. The fundamentals are not good. If it's a stock that you have to own, you feel you have to own it, keep an eye on 320. If it takes out 320, I think you easily see it under 300. And, you know, that's it. Another plane crash, anything terrible, you don't want to see that happen. But other stocks to own out there, you know, and besides Boeing. So that's,
well, let me,
that's my take on it.
Let me finish the question I started with and I branched off.
Sure.
I mean, who's more reluctant at this point? The FAA, is there always going to be another study they want to have, or one day they're going to say this thing's okay? I don't know who's going to make that call. I mean, is the FAA set up to make that call? I mean, they're not the same kind of engineers that they have at Boeing. I mean, you would think that at some point Boeing is going to say, here's everything we thought was wrong, and it's all been fixed, and we've been flying them up and down for, we've had 4,000 takeoff and landings in the last week, and guess what?
Yep.
Every one of them went fine. It's time. I mean, who's gonna, are they going up and down on these things? I mean, if we didn't have a job, of course, I might be able to, both of us might be limber enough. Evidently, all you do is go out to one of these places where these planes are parked, and it'll pay a decent dough just to maintain them. I mean, you gotta do a couple hours work on them every day. If it's hot, you gotta open the doors, and I mean, it's not like, what's it gonna take to get one of these things back in business? That's been parked in a, you know, parked somewhere for 4 months.
That's why they brought a new guy in to try and figure it out.
Well, it's got to be, what do you figure, 1,000 hours? It's got to be some kind of retrofit.
I don't know. Maybe they're done with it, you know? I mean, maybe they stopped making them. Who knows?
Well, they didn't stop making them until...
That's a whole other thing of pulling the ones out of the sky, you know, putting them back in the sky. It's a big problem. I guess the FAA does make the final call on that.
Well, I'm going to say that... they're still making them. They said they're going to stop the end of the month, right? But I bet there one's coming off the line today. And where's it going to go? Maybe you can park it in your backyard. It's probably big enough.
Yeah, well, my back wouldn't quite fit in my backyard, but.
So next week we're going to give our predictions for the year, are we?
Next week I'm going to be in Florida.
Okay, so you got somebody calling in, or are you calling in from Florida?
We got Brent. No, I got calling from Florida. Mr. Slava is going to come in.
All right. Well, then make sure you write down a piece of paper. A year in review. Yeah, make sure you write down a piece of paper.
He's also going to tell you what stocks to own in in the next decade. He's not even going to go the next year. Just buy everything. Buy everything. Take the sell button off of your computer.
I think
that's
investment advice. You buy everything for a couple of months, and I don't think we make it to the election with the Fed doing what they're doing without some kind of weirdo thing.
You can't fight the Fed. You can't fight the market. If you need your money to buy a house, send your kid to college, and get married, then take it out. But besides that, I mean,
you're probably right, bud.
Your pillow is not going to do any good. But got to hop.
All right, have a nice time in Florida.
Happy New Year to Maddie. Go Blue. I don't know what kind of mood I'm going to be in after that Alabama bowl game.
Oh, God.
But I'll be back. I'll be back 2 weeks from today.
All right, buddy. Take care. SP Futures up 2.25.
Go Blue.
NASDAQ Futures up 450. Come back. Hopefully we'll have Mr. Kenny Pulcheri.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Mean one, Mr. Grinch.
You can't be calling Kenny Pulcheri Mr. Grinch, for God's sake. He's no Grinch. He's the best there is. SP Futures up 250. NASDAQ Futures up 550. Are you doing your nine kinds of fishes tonight?
We are at seven. Seven's the number. But, it's Christmas Eve, right? Isn't that what you do? Or at least as a kid growing up, I thought everybody did seven fishes on Christmas Eve.
I'm scouring my emails here, and I do not see an invite. It's got to be here someplace. Must be on a text.
What?
Invite to your place. Just assume there was one here someplace.
Yeah.
I was over at your buddy Dr. J's last night.
Oh, yeah. How is he?
He's doing fine. He lives right near Lincoln Park, right near the zoo. So they everybody goes over and has a few cocktails, and they dash over and do the zoo lights. When I say everybody, I wouldn't be caught doing that dead. I have no interest in that. But
right.
So it's my job to make sure that nobody stole any of the booze, and and I watched the game, so that was my job. But he cooked some big honking prime rib, which was pretty good, and a beef tenderloin. And there's all this meat just out there, of course. And but all his two girls now have boyfriends, and there's a bunch of other young. All of a sudden, these young guys come in. It was like a bunch of wolves. I'm saying, what's he going to do with all his beef? All of a sudden, I'm like, hey, where's the beef? But it was a good time. It was a good time.
His girls are how old? Are they in their early 20s now, his girls?
Tristan, the oldest, is, I don't know, Kenny, if she's sophomore, junior, or Tulane, one of the two. And the other one, I believe, is a senior or I think must be a senior in high school. And she's got the new boyfriend that she met there, and seemed like a real nice kid. And her parents were there. I was talking to them. They were terrific people. So, I mean, it's a nice group. So, and, interesting. You always get, shall we say, somewhat of an eclectic group, the people you get from, you know, it's the high, it's the one percenters a little bit, you know. And somehow, you know, I land in there and somehow fit in. I don't know. Somehow, I guess, or maybe I don't fit in. I don't know. I always get invited, so I must be doing something right.
But is he still on with you? Because there were a couple of times when we were on together.
He hasn't been lately since he used to come on every Tuesday, but now he flies to New York on Monday instead. He used to fly like right after the show.
Right.
So now he goes out earlier. But, you know, I could always ask him. Whenever he's around, he's more than happy to be on, but he's usually on a plane. And, so, no, John was always fun. No, we did it together on the score for 5 years.
Yeah.
I mean, the two of us were always pretty interesting. He was more the host than I was the color man back then, and for lack of a better term. But we had pretty good chemistry because Jan remembers the name of every company and every person, and I don't remember any of that stuff, but I remember the substance of the whatever it was.
Yeah.
So I'll say, Jan, what
company? He's one of those guys, you know, you can remember the trade from 20 years ago. You remember exactly how it went, where you were, who said what.
Unbelievable. So what do you make of, I don't want to hear, as I just mentioned to Joel, I don't want to hear, Kenny Pulcheri, bleep can from GM stock rallies, you know. Like this poor guy from Boeing, the stock races up when he gets booted.
Right. Well, but I think that was a long time coming, quite honestly, this whole drawn out process. And kind of the way I think it was managed. And I think, listen, I don't think he's the only one to blame for the way it was managed. I think the PR firm, the company, whatever, I think it was, especially towards the end here, it was very mismanaged in terms of the way the news got out, what they said, kind of how they were presenting it. And then his presentation in front, I think what's really sealed this deal for a lot of people was his presentation in front of Congress there over the summer, right? When he just appeared to be, by a lot of accounts, out of touch with what the mainstream was thinking. So I think this stock had underperformed. I do think that this guy, Calhoun, everything I see about him now as I'm watching his resume and watching his conversation about him, is probably a good fit. And I think, quite honestly, investors are just relieved that somebody needed to change. Somebody needed to be held responsible. And listen, you hate to see it happen, but it happens. It happens.
Well, I just wonder if the people on the board. I don't know why it rubs my sell side mentality the wrong way, Kenny. That somebody who's working with you on the board and supposedly has your back when you're gone, he gets the job because he must have been lobbying beforehand. I always wonder what the politics of that is.
I think it was certainly true towards the end here. Over the last whatever it was, the last month or so, but you know they've been hinting at it for a while. No matter who you're watching, whether it was CNBC, whether it was Andrew Ross Sorkin, that was really interested in what that next move was. I mean, and you'd watch this every time they talk about Boeing, he was always bringing up what's Dennis Muilenburg's role, what's going to happen to him, do you think he needs to stay, do you think he needs to go, and so there's been a ton of speculation about it. And I just think ultimately the last couple of news items, you know, whether it was the way that they were planning with the FAA, what the FAA was saying in response, that it just got out of control for them.
Well, I just
they needed to change something, and so ultimately they had to look at somebody that had the experience, that had kind of the resume. I was looking at, they just had Calhoun's resume up on CNBC in terms of his prior jobs and other roles that he's had. So certainly he's qualified.
but whether or not he was actively lobbying for it or if others on the board were lobbying for him to do it, either way.
Well, I hesitated. It was so long ago, Kenny, to even lob it out there, but I will. I've had experience in design-build stuff before when I was at Pullman. Like I said, nothing on this scale. But I think the American public, I'd almost like to scribble down a few notes and won't say give a speech because I'm not big at that. But I think people have no concept. I have a little concept. I mean, on a project this big, I have a little concept. And we're probably talking about a 15-year ago concept with this plane. It certainly was on the drawing board long before they decided to cancel the 757. Because right. Essentially is the same, almost the same, what do you call it, distance it can fly, almost the same amount of people. But they decided to do it on a 737, allegedly 737 airframe, that would continue to be interchangeable with the pilots at Southwest. They can walk right off a 300 or 400 hop on this thing and turn the key. And I gotta believe, Kenny, as this was going on for 10 or 12 or 15 years, however long it takes one of these things on the board, somewhere along the way, at virtually every juncture, somebody somewhere said, boy, if we do this, then we gotta do this. This isn't really the same. There had to be a million decisions in there where people sort of knew that we're getting too far ahead of ourselves, that this thing is not the same plane. And somehow or another, they were able to blow it by the idiots at the FAA that there doesn't need to be a simulator. There doesn't need to be any pilot training. I mean, who hatched that plot? I mean,
well, I think that's really the crux of the problem, right? Because I think you're right. And along the way, like they said last night, I was listening to some commentary, and they were talking about how he was trying to, you know, jam it through and force it through the Muhlenberg, especially since the accident, as they've been trying to repair this problem, that he's been just trying to force it through at the FAA. And so you wonder from the very beginning, like you said, how did it happen? And who really wasn't paying attention to the process or wasn't paying attention to all those millions of decisions, like you said, that needed to be made. I think what I find really interesting about this is, you know, Boeing's been making planes for ages, right? And so they're making this plane, and then suddenly there's a design flaw, clearly, that is so big that it's created this much bigger problem. I mean, think about this. Yesterday I was thinking about it when you talk about all the ancillary issues that it's created with
right.
GE and other suppliers and around the world and all these people that are now going to be affected because Boeing can't get this together with this plane. And so, yeah, it is an issue. And I wonder, you know, how did they get it through the FAA when it had these clearly obvious now what appears to be clearly obvious problems?
Well, I mean, it'd be like Lou was saying, the engines are a different place, the wings are different.
Right.
I mean, every other plane that you and I in our lifetime, they came out with the 7. I was going to say in your lifetime they came out with the 707, but no, I'm not going to do that to you, Kenny.
Right.
But I mean, in my lifetime, it's the 727. Okay,
yep.
And follow it along. I mean, certainly the 747, the original 737, but every single time there was no bones about it. It was a brand new plane. There was never any hint that some guy could walk off a 707, plop his fanny in a 747, and say, "Give me the keys." I mean,
right.
But this one, I think at the end of the day that they're probably going to have to tell Southwest that these pilots have to be segregated.
Yeah,
and I don't think they want to say that. It's a big deal to Southwest to have their guys walk right off an 800 and hop into this thing.
Right.
And I don't, you know, I don't.
Right. Southwest is committed to them. I mean, that's all they fly, Southwest, isn't it?
Well, because they're mostly? All, because that was the whole thing. Every one of their pilots could fly every one of their planes.
Right.
And I'm not so sure that this is going to come out that way, Kenny.
Yeah, I'm not so sure it is either. But I also think the plane itself, the design of the plane itself is one thing, but I think it's the technology too, that MCAT system that
right.
they that controls the plane is clearly different from the system that controls another plane, because the other planes are flying fine, right? It's this technology on this one plane that's creating the issue for Boeing and for this particular plane.
Well,
which is why I'm curious: is the structure of the plane itself Is it the structure of the plane itself that's wrong, or is it the technology that's running the plane that's wrong?
It's certainly not as easy. When it first happened, Kenny, if you don't mind hanging a few minutes, if you got a few minutes, we'd love to have you. Since we're on kind of a thread here, and I don't get to talk to you very long. The first thing that happened, and I go into a local, I'd say library, but it's a bar, and there's a bunch of guys in there that are private pilots and so forth. And essentially everybody, when the first thing went down, I mean, you can only imagine. This Ethiopian guy had 20 hours, he had no business in there, you should have been. I mean, every one of these guys was like, if it would have been me, it wouldn't have happened. So and clearly, right. and the first information was that this thing, because of a bad sensor at 12,000 feet or something, was starting to cause the plane to dip, and the guys would pull it back, and then it dip. And, I think you and I might have talked about that. The obvious, if it was that much of just that system, it would take, a couple of gnomes like you and me to walk into every plane with a duct tape and duct tape the thing in the off position and forget about it, not even use it. But clearly, it's more than that. Because the first iteration was, if the pilot would have just kept control and flown the thing to 20,000 feet himself, it would have been fine. And yet,
right.
But yet clearly, I think that it has to be more than that, because it wouldn't take this long to turn the thing off.
Well, that's the point, right? That's the question, is what is it that there's got to be a bigger underlying problem, and is it the plane itself, or is it the technology, this technology that now, these planes really fly on their own, right? And so is it the technology now that obviously is running awry as well? I mean, listen, the position of the engines might be one thing that's causing a problem, but the technology also, you have to believe, is also at the core, that either the pilot couldn't override it, or he tried to override it, and it kept overriding him.
We had a group on CNBC yesterday. I don't know if you're watching it. Hopefully you're doing more fun things than watching that. But they had a couple of guys who were 737 pilots that took it up. They must be FAA guys. And they all commented that the thing is very jittery.
It's very what?
Jittery. It wants to move.
Jittery, yeah.
If it's not on the autopilot, that it's a little harder to fly than the others. It wants to, because of whatever, if it's the wings, or they're just not used to whatever. I mean, those guys were, quote, 737 pilots, and they all came back and said, this thing's a little tender.
Yeah.
So, obviously, people are going up in it and saying, this is not the 737 that I'm familiar with.
I think the other issue that they were talking about yesterday is, as we, as citizens and as Americans and travelers, watch this story unfold, there's really now a question. Would you feel comfortable getting back on a 737 flying in the air? I mean, listen, I don't know how many times before the accidents happened that I would get on a plane. I didn't pay attention to what the 737 was. I paid no attention to what the plane was. But now the question came up. As someone who travels, would you feel comfortable getting back on that particular plane? And so it was very interesting, the response. There was one guy on there that said, I'm not 737. And so I don't know. I don't know. Andrew Russler goes, yeah, I'd get on the plane. It's interesting because I wonder if that's going to start to play, especially the longer this drags out, is that going to start to really play on the way people consider how they're going to fly, where they're going to fly, and then what decisions the airline is going to have to make.
Well, look at the disastrous record of the DC-10, and I don't know that anybody ever refused to fly it, do you?
I missed it. Say it again.
I mean, look at the disastrous record of the DC-10, and yet, I don't know if people refuse to fly that.
Yeah, well, I think you're right, but the DC-10 happened, I don't know, years ago. Remind me when the DC-10 happened, but the 737. I think the world is a different place today. I think the news travels differently. I think the commentary travels differently today than it did when the DC-10 happened. In terms of whether it's Facebook, LinkedIn, whatever, people commenting, stories are out there. I think awareness around what's happened with this particular plane is very different than what it was like when they had issues with the DC-10.
What happens, Kenny, if the thing? God forbid, the thing is just a clunker. And you got how many bazillion of them made?
Yeah, well, I hear you. There's a whole warehouse full of these fuselages waiting to be potentially put into the air or not, right? I think ultimately they're going to get it in the air. I do think they're going to get it in the air. They're going to have to be some design changes. Um, but but I don't think it's going to be as easy or as quick. You know, the FAA was very, very clear. It is not Boeing's timeline in terms of when this plane goes back in the air.
What do you make of the iteration before this, the LN or whatever the one is, the one kind of the model sort of between the 800 and this thing that's having the cracks in that fork? This all starting to smell to me, Kenny. Like the 737 was, you could stretch it three times, but the fourth time we're having trouble with it. I mean, it just isn't. It's not a 757. It's not a bigger. You know, it wasn't designed that way, and now they're making it be one.
Right. Well, and I think that's going to clearly be certainly an underlying theme, right? An underlying issue as this conversation goes on. But it's going to be interesting to see. Look, at its core. Boeing is a great American company, right?
I mean, sure.
It's a defense contractor. They've been building airplanes for years and years. So maybe this is just, maybe this is going to be one of those chapters where this plane was just not meant to be.
Well, boy, I sure hope not. I mean, look at the suppliers and everything. And I honestly don't understand. I mean, there's got to be, if one of the Boeing engineers sat down, he'd probably make me out to be a total dummy, which I am on this. But I don't understand why, as soon as they can the 757, everybody said they have a hole in their product line.
Yeah.
Between essentially, then they stopped the 767. So you really had nothing between a 737 and a triple, and a, well, I guess it was some of the 787s are smaller than a 777, right?
I would not be an expert on the size of the planes and which plane fits where in terms of a lineup. But.
Well, I mean, it was 57, 67, 77. And now the 67s are just doing the tankers. So if it wasn't for the tanker line, they'd be out of business. And the 57s are bleep can't, right? So now you just sit there, okay, we just got rid of the two planes in the hole in our lineup, right?
Yeah.
So we're gonna take this other plane, which is the short takeoff and landing, basically. It's been stretched a couple times, and we're gonna stretch it even more. And I don't know if that was a smart decision to start with.
Well, and maybe that will prove not to be that smart decision. Maybe you're right. You know, once, twice is one thing, but then you start stretching it three or four times, and all of a sudden, you create issues for yourself. And I think that's probably just about where we're at the moment, right? Clearly there's an issue.
Boy, but I'm not hoping for that.
The issue's gotten bigger as the months have gone on, right?
I don't want to be right. It's like, you know, if you and I saw some guy using the wrong bolts on a bridge, and we said the bridge doesn't look so high, we don't want to fall on somebody's head just to prove ourselves right.
No, I agreed.
I hope that they can fix this thing. I would just wonder the politics of it. I mean, you're closer to these guys than I am. Do you think the people at the FAA are one of these days capable of making a call and saying it's okay and be believable?
Well, I think that they are. It was who was it? The CEO at the FAA. What do you call him? The CEO at the FAA,
the commissioner or whatever he is.
Yeah, I think he is, but I think he's going to be, especially now. They're going to be, the FAA is going to be ultra. I mean, listen, they should have been ultra cautious in the first place, but I think this is going to be the scrutiny around what the next step is and is the plane ready. I think it's going to be even bigger than maybe it had been, clearly, because obviously somebody made a mistake along the way.
Yeah, I just I wonder if they're getting into more and more stuff, and because it can't just be that particular piece,
right?
At this point,
right? There are other design flaws. There are other design flaws along the way, and so, you know, we'll see. And maybe that is true, and maybe that was one of the other reasons there was a push yesterday to let go of Muhlenberg, right? Maybe there is another underlying issue, and so now they needed to be more proactive about it.
Kenny, how powerful do you think you are when you're just that big? I know at Pullman, and this was years ago, we couldn't go a quarter without updating when we weren't delivering stuff when we were supposed to be. We had to cut our profit estimates down every quarter. I mean, how is it that Boeing isn't giving people updates? I mean, they were $5 billion, what, last March? It's got to be four or five times that now. Especially
right, but I think that, but I think that they are giving now, especially whether they're giving it or analysts are now giving the updates. But it is powerful because, like we've been talking about, the tentacles that Boeing has in the economy
in the U.S. economy is really amazing as you hear more of the story, right? You start hearing, oh, my God, you know, this whole division of GE now is affected by. I hadn't thought about that until all of a sudden they brought it to light. And then the other suppliers and then the other, you know, around the country and around the world. And so it is very important, which I think makes us even a bigger issue in terms of how they handle it going forward.
Well, Kenny, I can remember a long time ago, I can remember the Amtrak, the superliners, when we were delayed, you had suppliers. Yeah. Now, if you've got a supplier where you're going to, like if it's GE, you know, and you're going to have, you're going to buy, pick a number, you know, 20 to 40 engines a month. Well, if you're doing 50 planes a month, 100 engines a month for now to eternity. I mean, that's a pretty serious manufacturer. But I remember in the rail car stuff, the rail cars are so screwed up. You know, you build 285 cars, then you don't do anything for 10 years. I mean, it's really, to say that it's messed up, it's messed up. But I mean, the guys who were making the trucks, or the seats, that's a one run. I mean, you don't call the truck guys and say, hey, stop for 6 months. He goes, hey, buddy, we're making you 500. Well, there's 280 Amtrak cars, so it's 560 trucks, two per car, right? Hey, buddy, you better find a place to put them because we're shipping them. And by the way, we want our dough. some people you can maybe turn off. Maybe GE has the capability of inventorying in place. I don't know. Can you store 400 aircraft engines in a property they have? Hopefully. The last thing you want to do is lay off all your people for 4 months and hope you get them back, because even if you get the same guys back after you haven't done something for 4 months, would you want that guy putting the jet engine back together without some kind of retraining or something? I wouldn't.
No, well, and I think you're right, and I think that's now the concern that they started to raise about when they announced the delay once again until June, at least June of 2020. What are they going to do with all these people? What are they going to do? Are they going to furlough them? Are they just going to let them sit around and do? What are they going to do with them?
But I'll bet Boeing has very, you know, in our lifetime, Kenny, the last 25, 30 years, all these companies are just-in-time inventory. I mean, I have to believe that when the engines show up via truck or via train or whatever at the Boeing plant, you're not shipping it to a warehouse, and then when you feel like it, bringing it out to the plane. I'll bet it's going right out to the plane.
Right.
And they have, if all of a sudden they have to touch that stuff twice, I mean, I remember working in the food store. I'm sure you remember them from old Boston. The storage area was as big as the store. You'd haul stuff off the truck, and you'd put it in the back room, and then you'd bring it out when you needed it. Nobody does that anymore. There is no back room. There is. It's a little bit.
No, right.
You bring it right off the truck. You put it in the aisles. If it doesn't fit, you might have a spot for, if they gave you, you know, 40 cases of, you know, canned oranges instead of 20, you might have a spot for a little bit of overload. But I'll bet GE, Boeing, nobody has a place for this stuff to pile up.
So that's the issue, right? They were producing, what, 50 planes a month or something? Well, I forget what the number they were producing, but you're right. So the suppliers were producing the pieces and shipping them, and they were being installed, and the plane was going. And so now, if they're going to halt this production until July or June, whenever the next date is, they have to stop production, because you're right. Where are they going to put all these big engines, and where are they going to continue? What happens if in June they decide this still isn't right? They've built all these engines and they've built all these pieces that no longer fit. So at some point you got to stop until they've redesigned or fixed this problem.
Well, if you start fixing, changing where the engine goes, I think you got a serious problem.
Agreed.
It's one thing to have a different software and another switch in the cockpit.
I mean, at this point, it sounds to me like everything's on the table, right? In terms of the design of this plane.
Well, I can't. I just hope that there's nothing with the basic. But I will say this, Kenny, that if, just from my little experience in this, and again, it was a long time ago, if anything is wrong that is messed up, I will bet you that in at least 100 occasions at meetings in the last 15 years this thing was designed and developed, that people said, hey, you got to be careful about this. This is a problem. Because I think Boeing has an amazing amount of brilliant people. There's no way that any flaw made it through without somebody noticing it.
Well, I would agree. But so there's got to be a chain or a thread or an email if that's the case. The same way that when the news came out about the pilot that, you know, raised the flag and sent that email saying, listen,
there's something wrong here, but yet it got buried, right? That email got buried. That was explosive. And so if there's another email, to your point, where somebody's pointing out a flaw that they overlook, I think then that becomes, you know, once again, a bigger issue.
I think
at this point, though, if that were the case, I think by now, if that were the case, someone in the press would have gotten a hold of it.
Well, I just hope that there isn't somebody on day one that said, you're moving the engines 2 inches too far, this thing will never fly. I mean, there better not be one like that hanging around.
I think that is... That is one of the issues. The issue is about the placement of the engine being very different than on prior planes. And, you know, what did that do to the flyability of the plane? So we'll see.
Hey, boy, if you got another couple of seconds, what is going on with the Fed? Why are they all of a sudden not telling anybody anything? And was Powell waterboarded or paddled when he went to the White House?
So, no. So here's what I think is going to happen as we now move into the presidential election. I actually think the Fed is now completely on hold. I don't think they're going to, even though there was talk of a potential cut in 2020, I think that's kind of, although it's on the table, I don't think anyone's really going to consider that anymore. I think the Fed for 2020 is going to really do nothing unless there's a dramatic shift in the economic environment, which I also don't see. It doesn't feel like there's going to be, but I suppose anything could happen. I think the Fed is now going to stand pat because, look, it is an election season. Anything he does is going to be scrutinized, and then somebody on one side is going to say it's political. Somebody on the other side is going to say it's political. And so, therefore, I think the Fed's actually going to stand pat. And I think that was a little bit. I think you can hear how that story has changed in terms of how he's saying, you know, we're comfortable where we are. Yeah, rates aren't going up, but that conversation about another rate cut in 2020, you've noticed how that's kind of faded recently. Now, especially now that this phase one trade deal is supposedly done. We'll see in the next 2 weeks or so, 3 weeks, whether or not what Bobby Lighthizer said, you know, it's absolutely done. It's just being vetted by the lawyers. That always makes me a little bit nervous because when I think it's vetted by the lawyers, you know, there's a dozen problems that come up.
Plus, whose lawyers? Where are we getting those guys? It's like, who's lawyers? the story for national TV folks like you is that the Fed is standing pat. And I know Powell has told you and all the rest of us not to look below the covers. $40 billion into the balance sheet last week at an 11.2% current rate of rise in the money supply. Last time we did that was in the early to mid 70s, and look where that got us. These guys are not standing pat, Kenny. Even if they say the interest rates are staying where they are, they're not standing pat. They're busier in the last 8 weeks than they've been at any time since 2009. Why?
Well, is a lot of that, and you may know more about this than I do, but is a lot of that seasonal? Is this something that happens at the end of every year, the way the Fed kind of manages year end financing and all that?
No. Well, there's stuff that goes on the last day. Where sometimes they have to inject stuff overnight, but we're talking in the last 8 weeks, the balance sheet's going up way faster than it was in QE3, way faster, and they're telling you not to talk about it. Yet QE3 was the most vocal thing going. This is why we're doing it, and you know this is the solution to something. Now they're telling you, don't look at this stuff. Don't look at money supply. Don't look at the balance sheet. What do you mean? Don't look at it. I mean, how does a guy who studied Milton Friedman his whole life, you tell him, don't look at money supply anymore? Right? That's not me.
No, I hear you. Well, I guess we're going to see, but it's interesting because you're right. And I don't know if it's just because now we're at the very end of the year that it's gone quiet. Listen, think about where we were a year ago and what the Fed was saying, you know, all the conversation about the Fed. They were very vocal this year. Now it's been interesting that they've been less vocal as we've moved into the end of the year, but we're also in a different place, right? The economy seems to be better. The market certainly is doing okay. There doesn't seem to be that angst as there was last year at this time in terms of the economy and the outlook. And, you know, everyone was concerned about this ongoing trade war and what it was going to do to the economy. And clearly, that ongoing trade war, none of the fears that everyone was screaming and yelling about ever came true, right? The economy didn't fall off the edge. The global economy didn't fall off the edge. And so I think there's a whole sense of there's a different sense or less anxiety or angst in the system amongst investors. But, yeah, you know, is the Fed just kind of working quietly behind the scenes to to keep it all status quo and nobody really realizes it? I'd be surprised if nobody really realizes it, but I guess we're going to see now as we move into the new year.
If everything you said is true, that the economy is poking along fine, the worldwide recovery is on track, if all that's true, and you and I are sitting in the running the Fed, I would say if we got everything on autopilot, you and I are heading down to Polkeri's Bar and Grill and having a glass of wine or whatever. We're not saying, right, let's go into panic mode and pour money into the system and doing what they're doing. This is more than they were doing at any time past 2008. If all you said, which is true, which actually I think probably is true, what are they doing? It's like, it's like we're not going to war, but we've got our submarine plant working weekends and three shifts. What are we doing? I mean, I don't, if everything is as good as they say it is, I don't understand what's happening. I honestly don't. And more people are starting to pick up on it. They're saying, what are you guys doing? What was QE2? It was 25 or 30 billion a month, right? They did 42 last week.
Yeah.
Is somebody in trouble? Or is somebody starting to renege on somebody's dollar denomination? I mean, I have no idea what's causing it.
Right. Yeah, nor do I. But I guess as we move into this new year, we're going to find out if there's something. If the economy is not where they say it is, I think we would have known that by now, right? Because look at the economic data that's come out. It's all been relatively in line. Hasn't been hot, 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 but nor has it been weak at all. I think it's actually kind of humming along, and so I do think that the economy's fine. I'm not really sure the role of the Fed in terms of what they've been doing over the last month or 2 months. You seem to be much more knowledgeable. You're kind of watching their every move. But he has gone quiet, and they have gone quiet. But I think part of that is in preparation of 2020, the presidential election, that they're going to just hold pat. They're not going to do a lot of talking because they don't want to be seen as political, especially in this upcoming election, because I think it's just going to get ugly over the next 6 months.
Well, I do too. But the first, I remember Milton Friedman saying in class, Kenny, that the first signs of inflation feel so good. I think he said it's like your first beer. I don't know that this Christmas, if they come out and say everything was up 3% from last year. I don't know. Is the average price up 3%? I think it probably is. Is it up 4? Is it up 5? Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
Well, I think there are some things that are up even more, right?
Yeah.
That's always the conversation you and I have. For everyone to say, "Oh, there's no inflation," you wonder what world are you living in? Because especially when you go into the food store, that's where you really see it. That's where you really see it for the everyday American.
Well, when do you get to the point? And I'll lob this one at you because I actually did some research last week. It was pretty horrifying what I found. Imagine me doing some research on the internet and finding something, Kenny. Even a Luddite finds an acorn every now and then, they say. When is it when Apple goes up every day, is it not Apple going up with the value of the currency going down?
I don't know the answer to that question. I don't know. Is it the value of the currency going down? I don't think so. I think we're on the verge of another technology boom. This whole 5G that's going to hit next year is going to create another leg of this technology boom. So I think Apple and all these tech stocks are what they are because of what I see as a coming boom, not because of weakness in the dollar.
Well, I mean, I actually did. I found a work, Kenny, on the stock market behavior in Germany during the Weimar Republic.
Yeah.
I mean, when the inflation was, you let them out early so they could shop before the price went up in the afternoon. The stock market did nothing but go straight up. Went from like a couple hundred to like a million as people just kept buying because the prices were going up. I mean, I'm just asking. I'm asking you because I ask these questions. Do you really think that the price of a baseball team is up four times in the last 20 years because all of a sudden there's that much value in baseball, or is it because the value of what you're, is it that the dollar is lower? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I know the answer to that. It's very strange. I did some work on, I was mentioning this to Dr. J last night. He was, because he said they won't let anybody talk about inflation on the air, pretty much. But, I said, Jen, you know, your hospitalization is up 280% since 2000. Virtually the same number, Kenny, as higher education. So 280%. And if you look at primary education and say, well, that's usually buried in property taxes, and you look at those going up, it's almost the same number across the board, 250% to 280%. And yet the inflation number will have you believe that it should be 50% over 20 years. It's not even in the same planet.
Right.
I don't know how you get that genie back in the bottle. I don't think you ever do. It's almost
and that's going to be, especially after what we've gone through over the last decade plus, right, 10 or 12 years since the financial crisis, is it took us this long to get into this position. We're not going to get out of it very, very easily, very quickly. And I think it's going to be a long process, just as long to get out as it was to get in. And so I don't think it's going to be a problem that's solved, you know, next year, the year after that. I think central banks around the world are in way, way, way over their heads. And now have to figure out how to get us out of this.
Well, I'm not searching
for part of that argument was growth, right? Global growth was going to save everybody. Well, let's just see what happens. I mean, I certainly think that the economy is fine. Certainly the U.S. economy. I don't think the global economy is nearly as bad as people thought it was going to be, but it's got to improve from here in order for this to be saved, right?
Well, you wonder, obviously what we both would hope for is for the economy to grow a little bit, maybe even plateau, or essentially even the stock market. You know, I'm not saying you like to see it go up, but if it just hung in there for a couple of years and let the earnings catch up. Yeah, I mean, that would be the ideal situation. Now, are we going to get there? I don't know. I don't like the fact that it's getting narrower and narrower. And if you took Apple and Amazon
out of it, where are we?
Well, I thought Apple and Microsoft are what, 1,300 Dow points this year?
Yeah, yeah.
That's a real number. And I don't, you know.
Yeah.
I just, so what are you, are you in Florida? Or are you going back to Boston? What are you doing for the holidays?
No, we're in Florida. And it's kind of odd to decorate for Christmas and buy a Christmas tree and everything down in Florida. It is the first year I've done it. We're here. My daughter, my youngest daughter just got here last night. And my wife's family's on their way down between today and tomorrow morning to spend 4 or 5 days. And so, yeah, no, it's nice. The weather's beautiful today. It's been kind of stormy and lousy over the last 3 or 4 days. But it's a clear sky today. It's going to be 80 degrees and beautiful. So, I'm here.
Is this the first time you buy different lights for the yacht than you do for the house?
First of all, the greatest thing is I'm not in a house. I'm in this condo right on the Intercoastal. I'm actually looking out right now up towards West Palm Beach. It's beautiful, watching the boats go by. So it's been a very interesting experience over the last 6 months. You know, it's almost liberating, right? So, no, I don't have to decorate the trees and the house frame and all that stuff. But, you know, we did put up the traditional Christmas tree. I got a Fraser fir, which is also interesting down in Florida, that there should be a Fraser fir sitting in my living room.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, did all the lights and did all that stuff. And, tomorrow night we're going to have, tomorrow during Christmas, we're going to have dinner out on the deck overlooking the water. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be different for sure.
How big of a yacht can you fit on your dock?
I don't have a yacht and I don't have a dock.
So what if you got one? Where would you have to put it? You have to go to the marina?
Yeah, you have to go to the marina.
Gotta go to the marina.
Down in Hypalux.
Like the rest of the schlumps, you mean, instead of having it right behind the house?
No. Listen, I don't have that yet for sure, but I got to tell you something. What I did do, because I didn't have it. I didn't have a boat when I was up in the Northeast, and I don't have a boat here yet. But what's big down here, as you would imagine, are those boat clubs, right? So you just come and go as you want.
Yeah.
Today you get a 24-foot, tomorrow you get a 35-foot, the next day you get an 18-foot, whatever you want. But it's actually very interesting because you go in, you get this boat for 4 or 5 hours, you dock it and you walk away, say thank you, and you walk away. You have none of the issues, none of the headaches, none of anything, in terms of the ownership. And it's great because you always get a different style boat. You get to test them all out. You see which ones you like better on the open ocean versus just the Intracoastal. It's, it's, uh, it's actually been a very interesting experience.
I'd just be an intercoastal guy. Just go from one bar to the next.
I have to go a little bit further south because those bars aren't as frequent up here. I'm at the southern end of Palm Beach, right north of Del Rey. It's not until you get down into Del Rey and Boca and Fort Lauderdale that you start to see more of those bars right on the water.
When we went down to see it was long ago. We went to see a football game where we drove around Coral Gables and that old area.
Yeah,
everybody's got their little spot of water. The canals go all over the place back there, and everybody's got a spot where you can get to the ocean if you want to. But God, this is years ago.
Go right out to the intercoastal, and then you run right out to the ocean.
Didn't look to me like most of those.
The entrance to the ocean for me, we go down to Hyde Biloxi, and then it's just that you pull out of this marina, and the opening to the open ocean is right there. So it's great as long as the weather's great. Getting out in the open ocean, I love the water. I love the water. I love the ocean. I could spend all day doing water stuff. And it's been a really interesting experience. We're going to go out not tomorrow, but on the 26th.
Are you a sailor or a power guy?
I could do both, right? I love sailboats. I love the peacefulness, kind of in the intimacy of a sailboat. But I also love the power boats because I like to water ski. The kids like to water ski, so I can go either way.
I could see you with some big gold chain and some real noisy cigarette boat barreling by everybody's place.
Listen, the gold chain was like a lifetime ago. There's no gold chain. I'll take a picture and show you.
Dr. J had his boat up in, he just had up in Diversity Harbor, and this guy, three boats down, he must have had one of the, original cigarette boats. Louder than all get out. The thing, was butt ugly. The guy would be constantly trying to get the thing tuned. I don't know how many engines he had in there. And all of a sudden, you'd go down on Judd's boat. I was not a big boat guy. All of a sudden, this guy, blah, 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 blah. Then he'd adjust something.
Right.
Blah, this is going on all day. The thing never moved.
I hate when, every once in a while, you get one of those cigarette boats that'll go right here in front of the house, the intercoastal, so they can open up. I will say, when those cigarette boats go up, the noise and the sound that they make, you sit there and you go, oh my god,
yeah.
I can't. And I'm sitting, I'm not even on the boat, and I'm thinking about the people that are on the boat, the noise that those engines make. And it's a little bit like someone saying, look at it, I got a bigger one than you, as he throttles on and creates all.
Kenny, having never been on one, are they as loud when you're on it as when you're next to
them? I've never been on one either. I have to believe it's got to be as loud. It's got to be louder. I mean, listen, I know what it sounds like, and I'm not on the boat. I can't imagine being on the boat because how could you even? You can't even think. Never mind, have a conversation.
Well, I mean,
when it's even idling, it's making more noise.
I was in Michigan City, and I got up early. Doing a show early. So I go to get gas and coffee in the morning. And of course, I got to get donuts for the ladies. So I got to do something right for them. So this guy, it pulls in. He's got this huge truck. Kenny, the boat, it's like a cigarette boat. The thing, I don't know. The thing had to be 35 feet long, maybe more. And he's got a trailer. The trailer had six tires on each side, six huge tires on each side. I'm thinking, this guy, how does he back this into like a river? It's going to bang into the other dock or the other side. And all of a sudden, I look in the car, and the lady's got to be 70. I see this guy crawling around up top with the gas thing, filling it up. He's got to be 75. The paint job on the thing looked like a Jerry Garcia tie. I'm thinking the paint job had to be 20 grand. Who the hell could even do that? It had to be all stenciled. I'm thinking, this boat, how much will something like that even cost? What's this guy going to do? He's going to drop it in Lake Michigan. He's going to drive 70 miles an hour for an hour, put it back on the car, and go home?
Yeah, I don't. It's amazing because I don't get it. Because listen, most of that boat too. Don't forget the nose of that boat is so long. It's not useful space. It's not like someone's sitting out there. It's not like you got it's a bow rider where people are sitting out there. It's not. There's just a little space in the back, and it's got this big long nose on it. So you're right. I don't know how they really do it. I've never been on one. I've never had the pleasure to be on one. Never mind drive one. But it is interesting to watch. I think all they do really is just fly up and down the ocean or up and down the intercoastal when they can, because I don't see how you're not just going bar hopping on that cigarette boat.
No, I don't. Real quick before we let you go, stocks for next year, bud. We can do this next Tuesday, but Some of the people yesterday were picking on.
I told you, and we've talked about this. I like energy, just broadly energy.
You know what?
I was going to say. Like names like Exxon and Chevron, because I think there's a real opportunity there. I think it's deep value. I think that sector has certainly underperformed the broader market. But I think 2020, for some reason, I got it in my gut, I think 2020 just feels like energy is going to be one of the sectors to be in. And look, financials, I think, are going to do well. I like the whole cybersecurity space because I think the hacking has just begun. And even though we've been, you know, it's been going on for a while, I think more recently we've seen some of the latest stories about whether they're hacking the Ring systems or they're hacking, you know, anything that's got a camera in it, they're starting to hack. So I think technology in terms of cybersecurity space is going to be another important segment. And the financials I like.
Well, I've got some of the ones here. This Schlumberger is the one I've been kind of watching. It's one of the reasons why the XLE has done scata, as they say during the year.
Yeah.
I mean, this thing was a year ago, $75. It's been trading miserably in the mid to low 30s, really now since January. No, it was 2 years ago, it was 75. Since January.
Yep.
And every time it's got above 40, it's like the commercial with the whack-a-mole. People come with the clubs and club it right back down. And now it's back up over 40. If you'd have been on the, what's the group they have at lunchtime with Dr. J and a bunch of people around there?
Fast Money.
Yeah, they
not Fast Money, Halftime Report.
Right. I'm going to say everybody there is picking ConocoPhillips or picking something. I never dreamed that group would come out with those stocks. I mean, now you're the same way. I mean, it seems like this year oil's up 12 to 14% and the stocks aren't up at all. So, I mean, I'm sort of with you, but the reason why I'm tongue-in-cheek here is I've been logging this stuff the last year. I can't say as I've done so well with it.
I think there's going to be a catch-up coming in that sector. And Schlumberger, ExxonMobil, Chevron, I think are names that I particularly like. Look, they're big. Some people are going to say they're not sexy at all. They're kind of blowing. Well, they may be, but they're also big, solid names. They're nice dividend plays as well. And so, therefore, I think that's just one segment that I like in 2020.
One of the, I mean, as you know, I instead of doing this the rest of the day, I manage money for people. And last January, February, Kenny, we got a big injection. I started doing some sub-managing work with my protected index program for another fund. And instead of them hiring a guy and learning how to do it, they said, why not just sub it out to me and my gang here has been doing it forever. Anyway, I put I'm going to say $8 million to work in maybe a week and a half. It's a good week and a half. Real good week and a half. And so I'm talking to everybody, and we've got, I mean, you know, and you won't be able to go to the store today before somebody telling the market's up, you know, 27%.
Right.
Yet I've got some people went into QQQs. We had a bunch of people that said, no, if we're going to go any higher, I think that the Russell, you know, and I'm with them on the conversation, but there's several choices, you know, and these indexes, you know. Some people went into spiders. Some people said, no, but if we're going to go any higher, the small cap is going to at least be with it, maybe lead, and they've been dragging, and we put money in Russell. And some people said, well, you know, what about energy? It's been dragging so much, like you're saying, and so there's stuff in the XLE. Well, after 10 months, I'm reviewing it, you know, with people. The XLE is down, right? The Russell was up at one. Now the Russell's done some work the last couple of weeks, but the Russell was up like a dollar, so that was a clunker. Then the QQQ is obviously to the moon, and S&P less than the QQQs, but way better than the rest. So you could easily have picked some really good indices. I mean, I've got some people in the XLV did very well. That's the healthcare piece. XLB, the mature.
And that has rebounded ever since kind of Elizabeth Warren is losing momentum in the polls. Because, listen, a lot of that came because of Sanders and Momentum's commentary and conversation about where they stand in terms of healthcare and the pressure that industry was going to come under, as was, you know, the pressure that tech may come under if the country goes far left in terms of the Democrats, right? Because she wants to break up everything. So I think there is some concern there. But the XLVs, for one, have rebounded ever since she started to lose momentum in the polls, if you've noticed.
But the XLB would be the material piece, and that would be, you know, the, you know, real America, you know, buying real stuff. That hasn't done squat. A little bit, maybe, but so, I mean, if you could easily pick a wrong basic index here, and I've been picking bottoms on you know, some of the, even with the copper starting to creep up a little bit. Would you have thought that coming out of this particular spat with China, that China would be picking up here a little bit. And if China picks up, you would expect copper to pick up. So I jump all over this FCX, Freeport, because they do a little bit of gold. Now, again, anything doesn't go anywhere. I mean, all the stuff that you would normally think would move when all of a sudden China starts to, I mean, doing a little better than they were, because I think we were gagging them a little bit on these tariffs, you would expect this to break out a little bit, and I wouldn't be the only guy on earth saying, well, God, if China starts to do a little something, copper is not going to be $2.65 an ounce anymore. It's going to go back to $3. Yet, you know what? I'm still waiting. I don't know if I'm early or just flat out wrong. I mean, I don't know.
No, I don't think you're wrong. I actually think you're early, because I think, listen, the news yesterday, I think, is indicative, right? China came out over the weekend or yesterday morning and talked about, you know, cutting tariffs on 850 products effective January 1 and then cutting tariffs on technology products in July. I think that's a signal that, look, okay, we want to come to the table, right? And so I think that's a positive. So, no, I think you're right. I think you're early, but I think you're right.
Well, I mean, when you get in, of course, then you get stubborn. You say, well...
Right.
But, I mean, I do wonder if the whole thing isn't going to flip around. I mean, I don't know how much more I can buy Apple here. I just, you know, maybe it could be 300.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Listen, if you've got the core position in Apple, then you just keep the core position in Apple, in my opinion. Because you're right. I mean, then you get overloaded in that name, which doesn't do any good either.
Why do you think, I mean, without getting into the politics of it, I mean, the guy ran on we're going to protect all the basic industries and we're going to tariff the hell out of people if we need to. U.S. Steel is what, half of when the guy was running?
Yeah, I have to actually go look at it. I'm not sitting in front of my computer at the moment. Is it about half of what it was?
I will kick it right up here. But I know it was threatening to go under like $10 this week, which is really awful. I mean, when you think about it, let me kick it up here. I've got it trading 11.81. It was down a bunch. And let me get out my chart, Kenny. Got to have charts. Well, it was $45 on March of 18. And now it's 11.
Yeah.
That's a trip.
And now it's 11.
That's I mean, you could perfectly, I don't know, you've never been a well, maybe you have, but I've done retail brokerage for people, and it can be interesting. You really have to be careful in the sense that you get sort of a better sense, I think, Kenny, of how individual stocks are not participating in this incredible
move. And I think you're right. That's why, you know, if you take out some of the big movers, like you said, where are we really, right?
Yeah.
All we do is hear about all the ones that move. What about the ones that have been struggling? You know, U.S. That's interesting, because I haven't looked at U.S. Steel in a while, but what does that really say?
Well, I mean, they're going to say, don't help me anymore, for sure. But you would think that it would be, and didn't ArcelorMittal is now being bought by Cleveland Cliffs at some horrible little price?
Yeah.
Somebody is. I mean, it's, no, not our, what's AKS? Is that Arcelor?
AK Steel.
Yeah, they're not Arcelor. The AK is being bought by Cleveland Cliffs, and they're both trading nowhere. I mean, it's like these basic industries. I mean, you don't. If your biggest nightmare as a retail broker, Kenny, is 15 years ago, somebody walking into you with a portfolio in Chicago that had General Motors, United Airlines, Bear Stearns, Sears, Kmart, and you look at it and go, "Yeah, it looks okay." because you have
half of those names aren't even around.
That's what I'm saying. They're not even around. They're gone. I mean, but I mean, United Airlines. I mean, you can imagine the Chicago area would, because of those companies, were all here. Had a huge. I mean, awful lot of people, and way more people in Chicago own Sears and United than probably in Boston or New York. And on a percentage basis, because
I would agree.
You throw in General Motors, for God's sake. I mean, it's a Midwest. I mean, I know people. I mean, I got guys who, they have accounts here that their legacy stock is, you know, 8,000 shares of Exxon that the great grandfather left them, and they're never going to sell it.
Right.
They're not up 29%. They're not up squat. You know, I mean,
no, right.
What if somebody gave you a Schlumberger, for God's sake? Thanks, Pops, for that pig. I mean, you know, you forget the losers. When I started the business, Kenny, there was only 125 option stocks, and not right. one of them, I don't think, went belly up. I mean, right. I mean, they were all we did was, even though when I started, it was the Dow was 800. After a year of, you know, wondering if we're ever going to go up again, all we did was move up, and none of those stocks went out worthless. They all got taken over. They did something. But the idea that you could have a period of time where, you know, five or six, well, the first one that really kind of went belly up was probably Lucent, right? Which was what the world
was. What a blast from the past that is.
Yeah, well, I mean, I add GE to the list. I mean, what if yeah. you know, okay, I got GE, I got GM, I got United Airlines, I got Sears. I mean, what could go wrong? Duh. Hey,
right, listen, I got to hit the
road. You got to go? All right, buddy. Hey, thanks for hanging on, buddy.
I got to go up to Palm Beach and get on CNBC at 10 o'clock. Sorry to get ready and get out of here.
I thought you were going to go up to Palm Beach and go for a yacht ride.
No. Merry Christmas.
See
I'll talk
buddy.
To you next week.
You too. S&P Futures Bye. Up 1.25 now. NASDAQ Futures up 475. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox. The control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call, 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, everyone. Thanks, Sacks and Giants. A little late with the traffic weather sports here because we caught Kenny on a day when he didn't have to run, so I figured we'd hang on to him. SP Futures up $1 now, $1, up a buck, Chuck. NASDAQ Futures up 5.25, Dow Futures up 25. Let's go around the Asia. Nikkei up 9 points, call that flat. Shanghai up 19.6%, Hang Seng down 42.2%. Over in Europe, DAX down 17.1%, FTSE up 8.1%, Kakaran up 18 cents, let's call that one flat. News of the day, Japan 10 years, positive 0.003. U.S. 1.94, Bund minus 0.24. Oil up 24 cents, 60.76. Rent up 31 cents, 66.70. And a lot of people are calling for these oil stocks to go up this year. I still got some of them, so their lips to God's ear is all I can say. A natural gas, 217. 217 on Christmas Eve. That's really cheap. RBOB 171. And we've got gold up $5 now, 14.93. Silver up. Silver's almost up $1 in a week, which is, you don't usually get that. Copper 281. So it is moving up a little bit from the high 260s that it has been. But don't forget last year we were down 500-600 points on Christmas Eve, and market's up almost 40% since the day after Christmas till now, which is, had a huge run down, but then we've come flying back for sure. Hey, V, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports, our team's all lost.
Good morning. It is 38 degrees currently. Outside looks like it's cleared out. Sun is out. No more fog. Still high humidity. Probably will become cloudy in the evening. No chances of rain, though. The highest of the day is 51. The low is 38. In Phoenix, it is 55 degrees right now. Cloudy morning, rains and thunderstorms are expected during the day. The night will remain cloudy with a slight chance of rain shower. The highest is 58 and the lowest 48. And in traffic, we have one accident. The earlier crash on Dendrian West before Roosevelt, which causing solid traffic. They expect delays up to 20 minutes. Other than that, map looks clear, no delays, it's Christmas, people are out of town, so if you guys have any plans for downtown, I think it's a great day to come for a walk.
Are you,
That's what I did last year, actually.
Are you Skyping with the people back home?
Yeah, every Monday.
Well, that's cool. Mm-hmm. What is Christmas like in Ukraine? Is there everybody laying low, or can they celebrate, or what do they do?
Well, most of our people are Orthodox, so we celebrate as January 6th and 7th, including me. And Catholics are more on the west side of Ukraine.
Okay. So yeah. You got your calendar a little off, is what you're saying?
Yeah.
Or one way to look at it, or ours is a little off, you know?
Yeah.
Oh. See, you can shop all the sales if we're going to buy you presents for the 6th of January, right?
It's not the big of the sales and, like, all this stuff. I don't know. It's just, like, small family holiday. It's nice. People gathering maybe for a week because you have to go for dinner with one family, another family, some friends and stuff. But, no, we don't have this crazy sales and shopping and, of course, yeah, Black Friday is all like
that. Actually, Audrey was a... Family is of Russian Orthodox. Russian Orthodox and Orthodox are the same, or is it Greek, or are they all same date, right?
It's the same as Christian religion. You just have right. Orthodox, which is like old.
Right. Well, so, by the way, just to finish you up, the Bulls and Hawks both lost. So that's enough with that. The Packers should have clinched the division. The Bears are toast.
95-103.
Yeah, I got one of the listeners, and people send me stuff all the time. A fascinating article here. I get a lot of stuff. I don't bring a lot of it up, you know, on the show. But this one, I think a lot of people might want to read. It has to do with, once in a while I mention, when you start talking about all this debt, and all of a sudden people actually want to get paid, it can cause like quite a problem. And I try on the show, but there's really no way. I would like to have somebody to kind of research this for me a little bit. I mean, we've talked AV about how, you know, there's debt problems in Italy, there's debt problems in Greece, there's debt problems was in Cyprus with the Russian stuff there, and there's obviously problems in Argentina. We don't know what the hell's going on in Venezuela. It's very difficult to keep up with that stuff, and I would love to have, if we should goose the show a little bit, I'd want to have somebody who at least could give a report on one of those places once a week, even if it's 5-10 minutes for people, because everything just drops off the screen because there's so much other stuff going on, especially with the impeachment and everything. And you wonder, you know, I can't believe Venezuela is paying anybody. I can't imagine Argentina is. Italy maybe not. But this is an interesting article, and it's titled "The Economic Consequences of the Peace," 100 years later, and they're talking about the peace of Versailles. And like I mentioned before, and this kind of says it way better than I have, it has to do with all the machinations of John Maynard Keynes in this whole process. And he wrote a book about it, "The Economic Consequences of the Peace," and and people think it's his best book, and other people think it's his worst book, depending on how you look at it. And it's pretty interesting how it goes. There's a big table here, which I've never seen before. It has to do with all the different countries, who owed who. And as soon as somebody couldn't pay somebody, the problems that they had with other people. Because the only people that didn't owe anybody anything were the United States. So we're owed to a billion... seven is owned in the United States. Now, this is 1918, so these are real numbers. We were owed $800 million by United Kingdom, $485 from France, $275 from Italy, and it goes down the list. $8 million to Greece, but we haven't gotten that yet. Romania, $2 million. Serbia, $4 million. And then it'll say they loaned the United States, that's the people we loan. The United Kingdom loaned money to France, Italy, everybody but us. Now, France loaned money to everybody but us in the United Kingdom. So then, the United Kingdom wants their money back from France that they loaned dough to. Okay, so they're not getting it from France because France isn't getting it from their people. And we're not getting ours from Britain or France. So the whole thing is falling apart and down as people are demanding the payment. Or people are trying to pay. And of course, at the bottom of the list, which isn't on here, are the reparations that Germany's supposed to be paying. So every one of these countries is trying to get enough money out of Germany to satisfy whoever they owe, whether it's Britain or the U.S. And it really is, it's almost the people who put this together, there's no way the thing can work because there's not enough, it all starts from money coming out of Germany. And they didn't have any. You sit there and these people spent like years on this, putting this stuff together at Versailles and other places, and it's a really a good period piece of just how so many smart people go in one spot, and because of their vendetta essentially against the Germans, has set all this up in such a way where they couldn't pay, then all of a sudden the next people couldn't pay. And this is what I was talking about earlier, not today, but when the Germans came over here and started selling bonds in the U.S. So U.S. citizens were buying bonds in Germany. The money was then going to UK and then going to us. Anyway, Merry Christmas, everybody. No show tomorrow, but we'll be back Thursday. AV, thank you. SP Futures up 175. Back on Thursday.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.